The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, you can feel free to comment, and I might be able to respond. Bicycle Talk's a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening on Facebook Live, you can comment on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. So, with the finishing of the traffic calming project in stores on Route 275, I can't help but make a few comments, rants. So, I'll jump into this a little bit further, maybe a little later in the show, which it falls into what were you thinking department, and I have here a list of some of the worst bike lanes on the planet. But anyway, it's not a bad project. They put a center island down on a very busy road, which was a really good idea to hopefully visually calm traffic. They put a speed table in at one of the crosswalks, which is a really good idea. I'd like to see them at every crosswalk, but you know, we got one, so I guess you can't get too upset about that. But anyway, we did get one, which is good, because if you hit that speed table with any kind of speed, you're going to ruin the bottom of your car, and it's also going to be a very rude awakening when you're driving down the road. So that part's good because that calms the traffic down. And then they improved the sidewalk on the side of the road, which was pretty much a multi-use walkway sort of thing. It was a little bit wider than a sidewalk, and they put down like a pavement down there and all. And they replaced all the telephone poles and left them right where the old ones were, which is kind of silly because they would have been a lot nicer if they were further over to the edge if you were going to replace them anyway. But, you know, no one asks anyone in advocacy whether they're doing the right thing or not. And no one, especially the Department of Transportation, or as we know them, the Department of Cars and Trucks here in Connecticut, would ever think about asking someone who rides a bike what their opinion is, or a pedestrian even, what their opinion might be. So that's a little dig and a little shout out to the state of Connecticut. Next time you're getting ready to do a project like this, you might want to talk to the local advocates and see what they have to say, because they might be able to give you some really positive and great information that'll make your project actually work better than what you did. So, going back, if you were going to put down brand new pavement on a sidewalk multi-use slash trail anyway, why not perfect it by making it just a little bit wider and striping it out and making it a protected bike lane? That seems like a good idea, doesn't it? Seems like a good idea to me, but that is not what was done. Instead, we put down what I gotta go back to my friend Tony on this one, who gave me this one because it's one of my favorite expressions of all time. Instead, what we did was we took paint, which is, you know, cheap. It's not an expensive thing to do. And we painted sharrows in the road. Now, those sharrows are actually in the road and they are showing a certain dominance beyond the white line on the side of the road. They're actually in the lane, which is good start, good positive idea. But we in the world of bicycle advocacy, refer to them as the toilet paper of bicycle safety because they really don't work. And as I have had numerous discussions with motorists who say, you're supposed to be sharing the road, didn't you see the sign? I've had to explain to them that that's for both of us, not just people on bicycles. So the motorized vehicle driver thinks it means that you on the bicycle are not giving up enough of your road for them in their motorized vehicle. And of course, we feel the exact opposite. What? Anyway, there's my rant. I'll stop there, but I will go in a little bit. We'll explore some of the worst bike lanes on the planet. As I move on, we are going to the positive side. And positive side is the Hartford Courant had an article completing massive Connecticut rail trail seemed to boost more than fitness. It could be a major economic boon too. Well, yeah, I've been telling you this for years. And then the other thing I have on a positive side is there's a new Irish study that shows that protected bike lanes don't slow down emergency vehicles. Hey, how about that? That's kind of cool. That's another complaint that you get when we put in these protected bike lanes, you get people from law enforcement and from fire safety, and they say that, you know, it's not good because they can't make their turns and they can't do this and they can't do that, and but they actually can. But that's beside the point. It's everybody's going to complain when there's a bike lane involved. And then I got another positive side here, and we'll bring this up a little later too. And it's the Amish communities are using a surprising kind of vehicle to travel long distances. They just can hop on. Local residents say the change has been gradual but significant. We'll talk a little more about that in the show. Mechanical Minute and Bike Tips. Okay, here's where I'm going. I'm going all crazy here today. All right. I couldn't resist because when I saw it, I just thought it was funny. And then I started reading it and I went, well, you know, this makes a lot of sense. And I've always said that the bicycle shop is sort of like the local the local watering hole, we'll call it. It's, you know, kind of a place where people like-minded nature get together and chit-chat with one another, and it becomes a social community. So what do I have here for you today? The 12 reasons why biking is better than any dating app. How about that? Dating game getting you down? You should try bicycling. All right, and we will hit that actually right now, because why not? It looks like a really good time to go there. So I just can't resist some of this stuff. Sometimes it's just too much fun. So that's that one, and here we go. 12 reasons why biking is better than any dating app. This comes from Momentum Mag out of Canada. And they've always got some interesting things. And it says here, yes, we said better biking is better than a dating app. There are so many reasons to love biking. It's a fast, enjoyable way to get exactly where you want to be, location-wise. And who doesn't love the exhilaration of lifting your feet up and coasting down a hill at full speed? All that said, biking is often a solitary action, unless you own a tandem, of course. And those on long rides, to work, you may find yourself wishing you had someone to share your experience with. Okay, but finding a perfect biking partner often takes forethought. Is your riding style the same, or at least complementary? Maybe you're a little more timid about biking than your partner is. Perhaps you like to schedule your bike rides in advance. Do you like to go really long distances? There's just a lot of different styles and things that we do on our bicycles that may or may not be compatible. So it's fairly agreed upon that Tinder is the way of the future, but it gives us so many options and introduces us to people that we may have never met otherwise. However, Tinder doesn't always work out. And with that in mind, we've outlined a list of why biking is better than a dating app, because worst comes to worst, at least you always have your bike. All right. A bike won't swipe left. When you leave your place every morning and you get on your bike, it doesn't care if you're a blonde brunette, if you climb mountains, if you've taken a picture next to a tiger, or if you showed up the next morning commute wearing leggings. It respects the values for you showing up and maybe pumping its tires every once in a while. All right. And number two on the list, you'll never be embarrassed to show your parents your new bike. Right. As bike lovers, we've all spent countless hours lusting after a bike we saw in a store beckoning us to come and try it out. Maybe you saw someone else pushing your dream bike down the street or even online while pursuing for other bikes. And when you finally find one you really like, you decide to commit. That's a really great feeling. Now you want to take your new bike everywhere and show everyone how awesome it is. It sounds like dating, doesn't it? When it's you, and you take your new bike home to your parents, they won't ask prodding questions about what kind of shop it came from or where it plans to ride in the future, or be disappointed if it's not exactly the same brand as their bikes. Heck, they may even compliment its lean, sturdy frame and its sizable basket. Anyway, this is humor, folks. Just hang in there. Number three, it isn't rude to ask for a bike's measurements when shopping for a new one. In fact, it's encouraged. It's very important to find a bike that fits you and your life. Being prepared when going out shopping for a new bike and having questions to ask always is a good idea. You should never feel shy about asking about a bike and its capabilities, whether it folds or can accommodate, shall we say, a taller rider. Nor should we feel like you're being too picky with your list of specific requirements. But more than that, you should always go with an open attitude. You might find the bike you didn't expect to. Number four, you can have more than one bike. Oh, see, now the dating app, that becomes a problem, right? So there's so many things that in life we're expected to choose. Mac or PC, suburb or city, fries or salad. Your bike will never get jealous if you choose to own another bike. Frankly, it may even take some pressure off. All bikes have different abilities, and owning one, just one, may just not be able to fulfill all of your needs. Your cruiser may not feel comfortable going for a ride in the mountains, and your e-bike probably wouldn't mind a day off here and there to recharge its batteries alone. Number five, you won't get arrested for biking outside. Well, I don't know about that. Anyway, bikes love to go on rides outside and proudly wear the mud you bike through earlier in the day. To your bike, it doesn't matter if you take them into traffic or down a dirt path, as long as you put it to use. Bike lanes, roadways, trails, tracks, it's all fair game. Tip your hat to the other riders as you cruise by and enjoy your time with your bike and the great outdoors. Number six, a bike makes you feel better about yourself. There may be days when you're tired, you haven't had enough to eat, or maybe you've had too much to eat, and maybe you resent your bike for just a little bit for not doing all the work for you. There may be days when you wobble over to a bunch of other bikers. Regardless, your bike will be there the next day to let you try again with no judgment, sort of like a golden retriever. Number seven, it isn't weird to go biking with your friends. Biking with your friends is a great way to spend time together. Not only are you creating a stronger friendship, engaging in an activity that you both enjoy, but you can also bring up your shared ride later to your group of friends and show them how much fun you had and hopefully convince them to come biking with you both the next time. All right. And number eight, we're getting here. It's totally okay to ask a friend to borrow their bike. Sharing is caring when it comes to biking. When a friend lets us borrow their bike run an errand, then they're letting us know that they trust us with their valued possession. Friends don't get jealous when their bike fits their pals perfectly as well as if it fits you. It only makes it more convenient to hang out. Oh God, these are very funny. So you don't, by the way, if you've just come in on this is why a bicycle is better than a dating app. Just in case you needed an update on this. Number nine, you don't need to take your bike out to dinner to prove how much you like it. Your bike needs some good loving on a regular basis. It requires regular maintenance and may just get a little moody if you haven't paid enough attention to it lately. However, if you're good to your bike, it shouldn't require much in the way of daily funds. Your bike is the cheapest of dates. All you need to do is get your bike going and get on it and ride. Okay, bike rentals are legal. When traveling, renting a bike is a great way to get to know a city. By renting it, you get to stop along the way whenever you want. There's nothing wrong with taking a few detours, or even when you're staying home, renting a bike means you can try out something new, more challenging activity, even with a different model. Perhaps you'd like to take a ride and your own bike is all the way across the city. You don't have to bike. If you don't have a bike, you can rent one, and it's a great way to satisfy your bike craving without the commitment. Oh my God. Number 11, you can ride a bike before you decide if you like it. Sometimes, try that on a date. Sometimes you might think that a certain model is right for you, but then once you've purchased it, you might find that you're a little too caught up in the excitement to notice that there were some issues you hadn't considered. The model you just brought home is really unpredictable. Your friend may have told you this was a great bike, but it turns out that your bike is more suited to more than one kind of terrain and suits your busy lifestyle. There's nothing wrong with testing out a bike first to make sure you avoid a bad purchase. Number 12, you don't need to use euphemisms when talking about biking. It's awesome to meet other people who love biking and talking about biking as much as we do. That's even better. What's even better is when you're talking about biking, you know you're talking about biking. So anyway, there it is. That's very funny. 12 reasons why biking is better than any dating app. Ah, thank you, and a tip of the chapeau to the folks up at Momentum Mag up in Canada. That's a good one. That was funny. It was funny because people get all wound up with this whole crazy dating thing and all. And I guess I don't know. It's been a while since Fran and I have been together now over 20 years. We don't really look in that direction any longer. But anyway, it's what it is. Hey Mark, how you doing today? Lizzie's looking great on that bike. She's looking real good. Big shout out to Lizzie Gonzalez. Her dad is on watching the show right now. And if you're into the whole cyclocross scene, and the cyclocross scene is heavy right now, we got nationals right around the corner this weekend coming up, actually. And then of course there's all sorts of great European racing coming up too. So it's time to start paying attention to that, because there's all sorts of like great classic European cyclocross races going on. And I hope Lizzie does real well at Nationals, since you happen to be watching right now, Mark. Give her my best and give her a big pat on the back from Pedal and Ron, because I'd love to see her do well in Nationals this year. She's got a good shot at it. If you have been a follower of this show, you know that Lizzie won the Pan American Games just recently, and it was a very, very exciting sprint finish race. It was very cool. So anyway, I have to go back to the show and what I had down here. But anyway, let's move on to other things to talk about here today. So one of the things I started out with was in the content, a new Irish study is showing that protected bike lanes don't slow down emergency vehicles. So we get this comment a lot, especially when I attend meetings in towns and public safety shows up, and they're really concerned about, well, if you're narrowing that road, then it's going to make it really hard for us to get our fire trucks through, or it's going to make it really hard for us to get our ambulances through. It's actually not any more difficult than it was. It's just you have a little less space to do it. And that little less space, although it may be a little more challenging for you driving an emergency vehicle, it really is the same space that you were driving your emergency vehicle on before. It's just visually different. So anyway, it's a long story, and it's an often misunderstood story. So a new report out of Limerick, Ireland has delivered yet another evidence-based rebuttal to one of the most common arguments leveled at bike lane projects, that they slow down or block emergency responders. As cities in North America hear these claims every time a new cycling infrastructure is proposed, Limerick's findings add to a growing international record that's showing that the fears actually don't materialize. So let's hear it for Limerick on this. The conclusion was unequivocal. I'm having a hard time with the words today. The majority of Limerick's protected cycle lane schemes maintained or enhanced access for emergency vehicles. According to the report, designs that adhered to Ireland's national street design and cycling manuals effectively facilitated the movement of emergency vehicles by ensuring adequate carriageway widths and junction radii. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. In practice, it means that modern protected lanes designed with predictable layouts, clear sight lines, and reduced conflict points actually help emergency vehicles navigate. The findings aren't just a win for cycling advocates. They're now being shared with Ireland's National Transportation Authority as a guidance for future projects, and are expected to inform a broader nationwide active travel review. And while Ireland may be conducting one of the first assessments of its kind, this is hardly a new revelation to cities in the UK, Canada, and the US. Opponents of cycling infrastructure have long raised alarms about narrowed roads and delayed response times, but real-world data has consistently shown otherwise. In Toronto, for example, emergency vehicles services have been repeatedly told city council that bike lanes pose no barrier to frontline responders. The city has even studied the issue on major corridors such as Midtown, Yonge Street, and Bloor West. The findings: no meaningful delays, with fire service reporting no degradation of response time, and paramedics confirming no evidence of emergency response impacts. So just like Limerick, the data showed that the overall response times within bike lane corridors performed as well as or better than citywide averages. And as more cities start redesigning their streets for safety and mobility, one pattern is becoming unmistakable. The perennial warnings about emergency vehicles stuck behind those bike lanes aren't supported by evidence. Limerick's new study adds another strong data point to an already long list, showing that properly designed cycling infrastructure doesn't just coexist with emergency service, it often improves streets for everyone that uses them. Good news. That's great. Well, thank you very much, Ireland, for coming up with that survey and passing that on to us. Okay, now, and on another note, as I was talking about bike lanes and the lack thereof, or the short-sighted purpose of sharrows on roads, etc., here are some of the worst bike lanes on the planet. Now we're going to go around the world on this one. I will tell you that this is definitely it's a journey, and this information came from people who had submitted different reviews of lanes in their area, and they embarked on a global journey here to uncover the darkest secrets of the world's most treacherous bike lanes. From perilous paths to unexpected obstacles to glorified sidewalk snippets. Join us as we shed light on the new bike lanes that leave cyclists scratching their heads in disbelief. These are the lanes where two-wheeled enthusiasts might find themselves asking, who thought this would be a good idea? Didn't I just say that earlier in the show? Fasten your helmets and saddle up for a tour of the worst bike lanes on the planet as we delve into the bumpy, the absurd, and the downright dangerous, all in the name of cycling exploration and advocacy. First one on the list. You're going to love this. Manhattan's East Side Greenway. Didn't I just get through telling everyone how New York City has been nominated as the best place for bicycle infrastructure in the United States this year by the League of American Bicycles? But don't forget about the East Side Greenway, because the East Side Greenway is, it's a bit narrow, and it's like got a Jersey barrier separating you and then a brick wall on the other side. And it's so, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, maybe it's like 4 or 5 feet wide or so. So it definitely has an issue as far as that goes. Not to mention the fact that, you know, it's just you've got lots and lots and lots of car traffic on one side of you, which could be a little alarming when you're riding your bike. But then again, once you've gotten used to it, it's really not that bad. And here we go. Here's another one. The Pacific Coast Highway in San Diego, 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, but cars routinely drive about 70, and they have there the toilet paper of cycle safety, and they have Sharrows painted on the road with a quote unquote designated white line lane, which is not a protected lane at all. And you know, when cars are going, but this reminds me kind of like Florida's got this issue. They have these bike lanes all over the place on the west coast of Florida, where we go down and visit Fran's mom every year. But they're on roads that are very, very busy. And the busy part I can handle. The fast part gets a little alarming, because we all know speed kills, and that's really where the real problem is here. So the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit is not enforced well, and therefore you have 70-mile-an-hour cars going blasting by you with only a 4-inch stripe of paint to protect you. Not great. Dublin, Ireland. Going back to Ireland. 1 meter wide, two-way cycle and pedestrian path. It's normally really busy. And boy, the picture that they show a couple of pictures here on this, and they are, it's bad. It's just really bad. One, it looks like a narrow alleyway that you could barely fit yourself through with the width of the handlebars of your bike. And then the second picture that is shown here is just a really busy street with cars driving right down the middle of the bike lanes. Great, good stuff. Sydney, Australia has lanes start on the left, mind the steel poles, go for 30 meters, and ends with a cyclist dismount sign. Yeah, great pictures we have here of all this. Madrid, Spain gets another shout out because their bike lanes turn into sidewalks. And the sidewalks have signs with poles on them that are right in the middle of the bike lane. So there you go. someone has a 40 second video on this too, but I'm not gonna talk about that. But it is very alarming to see that someone is actually riding a bike in this kind of traffic. The picture that they have here is a picture of a cargo bike. It's one wheel in the back, two wheels in the front, and those wheels span the width of the bike lane. That's how big the lane is. Not great. Richmond, British Columbia. Urban trails just ends and dumps riders right into traffic under a bridge to nothing. Cyclists get to meet traffic going 50 to 60 kilometers per hour. And San Diego, California. So there's just Just an incredible picture here of a bike lane in San Diego, California, which has moss and grass and disrupted pavement and everything that you could possibly imagine growing in it, except possibly a what used to be illegal substance. But it's just it looks more like I don't know what it looks like. It's really bad. So somebody, thank you to someone in San Diego for pointing this one out. And no, actually, I'm sorry, that was the one from British Columbia. That was the one that the urban trail that dumped into under a bridge. The next one is San Diego, a notorious intersection in San Diego. Zoom out and note the redundant freeway on-ramps. So here you've got your bike lanes all marked out. Green box outs, green lanes identifying that a bike belongs there. But it actually is coinciding with freeway on ramps. And as we know, when people are in a hurry to get on the freeway, they don't tend to look at the bike lane when they're doing that. So that's another one. Murcia, Spain. What don't they like about this one? Oh, so great bike lane. They show this bike lane, it looks really good, and then all of a sudden there must have been some sort of a slide of sorts off of the side of an embankment, and it just slid down and completely covered over the bike lane. And it's a protected bike lane, but the problem is that it is inaccessible because it looks like a little landslide happened on it. And let's see here. This is Belfast, Ireland. the bike lane has got a bus stop right in the middle of it. So you're riding along, and in order to get around the bus stop, you either have to scoot yourself around the backside of the little cubicle that you would stand in to wait for the bus, or you would have to drop out onto the road and go around the bus stop that way. And it's just great planning, really good. Calgary, Alberta. Yeah, again, it's just another bike lane that is basically painted out right in the middle of two major lanes of traffic. So you're kind of the median divider of the traffic on your bike. That's not good. Newcastle, Australia. Let's see, what are they going to show us? Oh boy. Newcastle has the awfulness approaching a hospital, which is a major employer. Unsurprisingly, parking is a major problem since virtually no one cycles to work. And so they've got this bike lane, which is again, on one side, there's an entrance ramp from a highway. On the other side, there's two lanes of traffic, and there's this dotted line that shows you where the bike lane is. Not great. And let's see, London. London Cycleway 1 is going to be hard to beat. The majority of this joke of a route, and it has been very mismanaged by four separate local authorities, is missing key ingredient, a cycling lane, and it is instead a confusing backstreet route of compromised roads filled with cars. But that's the bike lane, and that has the classic picture of a bike in the middle of the road with paint that identifies it as a bike lane, which is not correct. In France, near Paris, there's a bike lane merging into a quasi-highway. And boy, it looks real busy. Hobart, Tasmania. The shortest bike lane in the world is in Hobart, Tasmania. Okay. We don't know how long it is, but it doesn't really say that. Northfield Road in Waterloo, Canada. Oh boy. Yeah, it's another one of those. We're going to make the bike lane be the median divider between three lanes of traffic. Great, great idea. We could go on forever on these. They're awful. And the tight squeezes that I'm seeing in all these places. And we, but I have to go down to where I know, and that is a death trap in Florida. Yeah, there's a great bike lane that you're riding down the lane. It has the green paint on the lane, and then it has a kind of a green striping in the bike lane, and it's right on a merge from a major highway onto a secondary road. And so there's going to be cars coming up through that merge lane, and they're going to be crossing over into the bike lane. Hope there's no bikes there when they're doing that. So anyway, there's just lots of this stuff. And it's just, once again, I go back to where I started here today, and that is that all you really need to do is talk to somebody who rides a bike and ask their opinion, and maybe you'll get better ideas about how to build things. Good God, there's one Horseshoe Bay in British Columbia. They just put planters right in the middle of the bike lane. Nice. And I'm talking like 3-foot diameter planters. Nice. Really nice. This can go on forever. We're not going to get crazy about it, but at least I guess we should say they're trying. But anyway, that's what it is. We don't understand it, but you know, once again, communication is such a wonderful thing. Let's move on to something really positive here. Amish communities are using a surprising kind of vehicle to travel long distances, and they can just hop on. So the it's a surprising twist that blends tradition with technology. Some Amish communities in Iowa are embracing electric bicycles as a practical and sustainable way to travel long distance. No horses required. For generations, the Amish have been known for their reliance on horse-drawn buggies and their cautious approach to modern conveniences. But in places such as Kelowna and Bloomfield, e-bikes are quietly joining the mix, offering a simpler, faster, and more accessible way to get around without compromising core values. According to the Iowa Capital Dispatch, the e-bikes are gaining traction among new order Amish, more moderate sect within the community that allows limited use of modern tools. Local residents say that the change has been gradual but significant. What began as a few bicycles rolling down the road has grown into a small movement of Amish riders zipping among farms, markets, and neighboring towns. The appeal is clear. E-bikes make it easier to navigate Iowa's hilly terrain and gravel roads, reducing the dependence on horses while saving time and energy. The riders can cover more miles efficiently, especially for errands, family visits, or work in nearby towns. Some have even added baskets and trailers to carry groceries and children, a modern twist to today's classic buggy. In Indiana, they can just hop off their bikes and zip down the road. The Amish have lamented over the years, per the Capital Dispatch. The Hoosier State has seen the California of the Amish world, and this e-bike adoption has moved the needle in the Hawkeye State. Beyond convenience, the shift also carries environmental benefits. E-bikes produce no direct pollution and use only a fraction of the energy required to power a car or a small tractor. As rural communities adapt to changing transportation needs, the Amish's embrace of low-impact technology offers a reminder that sustainable progress doesn't have to mean abandoning tradition. So let's shout out to the Amish. Local businesses have taken a note too. Small shops are now selling and repairing e-bikes, while local governments have added charging outlets in town centers. For many of the Amish residents, that means a newfound freedom and a cleaner, quieter way to move through the countryside. Everyday commuters are also increasing, hopping on the trend, making the travel times to work cheaper and greener. You know, we noticed this when we were down in Florida the last time. There are a number of members of the Mennonite community in Florida, on the west coast of Florida, over in Sarasota County, and they all ride bikes. They're all on the bike trail, and that's how they get around. And they work in a lot of the local stores, and that is their transportation. So it's kind of cool to see that they've at least made this what used to be probably a restricted activity into something that is actually working and in a good direction. So, let's see, what else is on the list? Oh, we got so many things on the list here today. The DOT is undercounting the e-bike boom. A new study from MIT grad student shows that e-bikes are the most popular vehicle for those using New York City's bike lanes back to New York. E-bikes comprise around two-thirds of the vehicles in New York's protected bike lanes, far more than the Department of Transportation is counting, a new study found. The findings of the study, which was called Understanding Micromobility in New York City, reveal that all motorized micromobility vehicles, basically anything with a motor that comprises 75% of the vehicles observed in protected bike lanes and at five sample locations, and around 64% of the vehicles were electric bikes, far and far away the largest category of vehicles in the city's protected lanes. Beyond showing that e-bikes are the dominant mode in the city bike lanes, the study also showed a better way to record how many and what type of cyclists are out there on the streets. The average study recorded 25% more vehicles, bikes, e-bikers, and other motorized two-wheelers in the bike lanes that were counted by DOT in the same five locations. And Jake Borey is the Massachusetts Institute Urban Planning Master's grad student who authored the study, said he was motivated to analyze the mode share because the city data doesn't record the types of vehicles in the bike lanes, and it's difficult to get government to act on something that isn't being tracked. What gets measured gets done, and it's important to be able to advocate for the increased use. But the DOT is just systematically undercounting the vehicle use. It really takes away from the argument for more bike lanes. The study looked at five sites where there were already Department of Transportation bike count sensors, and they studied them over a course week of 2 to 3 hour spans and sorted into 10-minute chunks in the morning and midday. In order to classify each bike, Bore uploaded 50 hours of footage into software that is frequently used for wildlife observations to separate out the different modes of roaming the bike lanes. There's one caveat to Bore's observation of high levels of e-bikes. He recorded the locations in January when the cold weather means that a higher portion of the cyclists on the roads are delivery workers who just can't sit out winter. The study is also limited by the five locations chosen, which are mostly bridge crossings, high elevations, that encourage e-bike use. So, still, the diversity of bike lanes inside the bike lane ecosystem suggests that the transportation department is inadequately planning. To Bore, the prolific use of e-bikes and e-scooters should inform the city of how the city should be designing their streets. When a bike network really started to be built out in the early 2000s, there was and has been a focus on the pedal bike. And so this has been an overarching question about the findings. Is this idea out of date? 3/4 of the vehicles in the bike lane are motorized and have different masses, different speeds. And how does that influence the city's decisions around not only policy, but also about the design structure the DOT is putting in? So this is all very, very interesting. Of the 9,629 observations, 2,234 vehicles, or 23.2%, were recording being used for commercial purposes. In other words, the vast majority of cyclists, even in January, are not commercial riders. And even when electric city bikes are removed from the count, non-rented e-bikes still comprise a plurality of vehicles in the bike lanes, a suggestion that a lot of New Yorkers have purchased e-bikes and therefore the DOT should plan for that new cohort of road users. Cool story. Very, very cool. That was from Streets Blog, New York City, and a really, really cool observation from them. All right. So on another note, here we go. This holiday season, you could buy your kid a bike with your pre-tax healthcare money. Do you have an FSA account that's about to expire, or an HSA funding, HSA fund gathering dust? Now it's a great time to invest in your child's health by getting them a bike with a little help from your fellow taxpayers. Now, this isn't for everyone. Obviously, it's not accepted with all health policies out there, but maybe, if you talk to your health care insurance company, that they might be able to allocate funds in this direction because it is for the better health of family and well-being. High-end bike manufacturer Prevelo announced a new partnership last month with TrueMed, a company which helps qualified parents prove to insurers that they're eligible to spend pre-tax healthcare funds on specific purchases designed to boost their family's wellness, including bicycles for their children. So the company is called TrueMed, and they're working with a bike manufacturer called Prevelo. So though many Americans spend their health savings account and flexible spending accounts on insurance deductibles and prescription costs, or forget to spend them entirely, I'm guilty of that. HSAs and FSAs, as they're typically called, can also be spent on preventative medicine musts like exercise equipment that can help would-be patients avoid visits to doctors in the first place. Buyers must get a letter of medical necessity to prove that they need the equipment before the purchase, but considering less than 7% of the U.S. adult population has adequate cardiometabolic health, a lot of people likely qualify to buy a bike with tax-free money, even if they don't realize it. Meanwhile, even fewer Americans know that many brands of outdoor bikes are often HSA and FSA eligible, much like stationary bikes designed for indoor use, and that they can use those same dollars to buy bikes for their children too. Again, kids have to qualify, but fewer than one in five U.S. children get the recommended amount of daily physical activity needed for heart health, which means most of them could likely benefit from this benefit. If enough of the tens of millions of HSA and FSA holders in America took advantage of it, that could make a serious impact on public health. We have an epidemic of kids in the United States spending too much time sitting down behind screens, and anything that gets kids out riding bikes is good for a variety of reasons. And if we think about the long-term health costs of all those adverse health effects and sedentary lifestyle, if buying a kid a bike can reduce the risk that that kid is going to have a cardiovascular health problem in the future, or obesity-related health problems, even some mental health issues, I think that the cost of a bike is a pretty small price to pay. Inspired by a search for a great bike for their own children, the author and his wife started Prevelo in 2017 with the goal of winning over younger riders in a hyper-stimulated world where omnipresent screens constantly compete for their attention. The bikes on the market at the time, though, were largely inexpensive miniature versions of bikes for adults. They weren't really purpose-built for little bodies, and designed to be ridden by the only to the end of the block, or passing down the younger sibling once the original rider outgrows them. That meant too often kids got out of the saddle long before cycling became a lifetime habit. The problem with those bikes, they make them so cheap that kids don't want to ride them also, so they worked in the other direction. The bikes that they're selling are much more expensive. The company is called Prevelo, Prevelo, and it certainly is going to be an investment, but it's an investment in your child's future. So I tell people that all the time when they talk to me about, well, I can go to the big box store and I can buy a bike for X number of dollars, and I go, yeah, but that bike was built to be thrown out, and that's what you're going to do with it because it won't last. And I know it seems like it would last, and what could possibly go wrong with a bike, but you'd be surprised. The wheels on the bike, on the little bikes that I would see coming out of the big box stores that I sold in my bike shop that could be put on those bikes once they had destroyed the wheels on them because they were inadequately spec'd for the bike, the wheels cost more than the bike originally cost. I mean, it's you get what you pay for. So you go to a bike shop, you buy yourself a good bike instead, And your child gets to ride safely on a bike that you know and are aware of the fact that it is going to last a long time, and they will be safe on it, and they will be able to stop on it, and they will be able to do things without incident. And then, yeah, sure. If the child outgrows that bike, there may be another child in line for it, or there may be someone who would purchase it used. And being that high quality of a bike, it's a good used bike purchase. Or if you're really feeling generous, you can always give it to charity because there's always people looking for bikes, especially for kids. So it's really a better way to go if you're thinking about it. And the idea that you could use healthcare insurance to buy bikes is just intriguing to me. Probably not on our immediate radar here, but it is something definitely interesting. So the Hartford Current, I'm getting down to close to time here, so we're going to go over this one quickly. The Hartford Current came out with an article about completing a massive Connecticut rail trail is seen to boost more than fitness. It could be a major economic boon too. This is from the oh God, the Department of DUH, as we call it here, duh. It's talking to a bike shop that is located in Simsbury, that is right off the Farmington Canal Bikeway or a Greenway, a popular biking and walking trail that extends from the Connecticut shoreline up to Massachusetts. The shop estimates that many of its customers are looking for bikes to use on this popular pedestrian bike trail. I think the average person is coming in, 60 to 70% of them are purchasing bikes that can be used on a rail trail, and I don't ride my road bike on the road anymore because I've been hit twice. Once they put on the rail trail, it's a great avenue to safely get out and bike. By the way, riding on a rail trail is not necessarily safer. I'm gonna mention something that I talk about all the time, and if you are riding at rail trail speeds, then it is safe. If you are riding like you were when you were on your road bike, you're not safe and you should really slow down. But that's another story. So, this particular shop says is just one of hundreds of businesses that see an economic benefit from the Farmington Canal Greenway. A new study shows that a completed greenway could generate up to $60 million once it's finished. The popular bike and walking trail, a 55-mile route along the Connecticut that runs along former bike trails, bike tracks stretches from New Haven to Granby through Massachusetts and into Northampton. After years of delays, the Connecticut section is estimated to be fully completed by 2030, according to a spokesperson from the state's Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. The entire New Haven and Northampton Canal Greenway, which is commonly referred to as the Rail Trail, is 81 miles total in length. A new report from Cambridge Economics, an economic consultant group, shows that the completed greenway will significantly boost economic development for communities along the trail. Existing trail users are estimated to support 166 jobs that pay $9.3 million in earnings and generate $16.7 million in value, according to the report. Completed greenway could support 351 to 582 jobs, earning $20 to $33 million in wages, generating $35 to $60 million in value. Last year, Greenway users currently generated an estimated $15.1 million alone on food, accommodation, retail, and other items, according to the study. The current trail segments attract an estimated 800,000 users each year. The two future scenarios estimate trail usage at corridors that are not yet developed. The low scenario estimates continuous trail would attract 1.3 million users each year, while the high scenario estimates 1.6 million users annually, according to the study. These trail users spend money on food, accommodation, retail, and other items, benefiting local businesses and the overall economy. In total, Existing trail users spend an estimated $15.1 million each year, while users of a completed trail are estimated to spend $32 to $53.8 million annually. So the consultant group uses a holistic input-output model to assess potential economic impact using indicators like employment, income, and business growth. The study also takes into account a low and high scenario, which gives both a conservative short-term model of 5 years after completion and a 10-year model showing more growth. Once fully developed, the Greenway will be a continuous corridor for walking, running, biking, with connections to urban districts, town centers, neighborhoods, and landscape, natural landscapes, according to the study. Current gaps in the trail include a 5.3-mile gap in Plainville, a 0.7-mile gap in Southington, 1.5 miles in New Haven, and 3.9 miles in Southampton, Massachusetts, 4.8 miles in Westfield, Massachusetts, officials said. So there it is. There's a lot of money to be made with bike paths. And, you know, it's not costing a lot to put them together for the amount of feedback you get from them. So direct spending, it's just, there's just so many more things that we could be doing with bike trails. Bike trails are an answer to an economic problem. And so hopefully we can see this expanding even more. I am completely running out of time. I had a few other things I wanted to talk about today, but we can table those for next week, and then I will get back to you on that. So finishing points, give us your opinion. What do you think about bike trails? What do you think about possibility of generating lots more revenue with the bike trails? Do you own a small business that's near a bike trail? I know that a place that I'm going to be doing my training for my next League of American Bicyclists education is going to be at a car dealership, which is right along a bike trail. That bike trail that we were just talking about, actually. And the owner of that car dealership loves the bike trail being there because he gets like free advertisement for him. So, you know, because eventually you need a vehicle to carry your bikes around in. So it's a no-brainer. But anyway, bicycling is freedom. Life is better when everyone rides bikes. Cycling is an easier and safer option for more people because when more people ride bikes, people are happier and healthier, and our communities are safer and friendly, and our planet is greener. Together, we can help more people know the joy of bicycling. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. You've got to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and the price of gas and the lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. Show up to a town meeting. Go to a planning and zoning meeting. Anything. You know, check it out. See what's going on in your community. And hey, take the Pedal and Run Challenge. Park your car one day. Just one day. For the week, just one day a week. And use your bike instead. You're going to surprise yourself. You'd be real surprised how much you can do on your bike. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or you're driving a car or truck, please be safe and be kind. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, you can leave a comment down here below. If you're listening to an audio file or on the radio, you can send me an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And you can also listen to past episodes on whus.org, Spotify, iTunes, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores and whus.org. Take care. Thanks for listening. Get on your bikes and ride!